Morning. Today's daf in Vavzar is Lamed Vav. We are in the Mishnah on Lamed Hamed Beis. We start today discussing other Yisurim that were imposed by the Chachamim. And as we'll see in the Rashi in just a moment, it has a lot to do with chasnas with intermarriage. Mostly has to do with intermarriage. I'll show you another Rashi also a little bit later on, a couple days from now in the Gemara. But in the meantime, however, let's begin with the Mishnah. Elu Dvarim Shalav De Chachamim. So these are things that are going to be produced by a non-Jew. The Ain Isur Misur Hana, but their Isur is not going to be an Isur Hana. This is contrasting to the first mission of the Perek. The first mission of the second Perek of Avodah Zarah, now a week ago in the Daf Yomi, so back on Chavtes Amud Beis, so the Mishnah there talked about those things which are Isur and have not only an Isur Achila, but an Isur Hana as well. So for example, the primary example over there in the Mishnah is Stam Yenam. So Stam Yenam, they're in the Mishnah, so you're not allowed to drink Stam Yenam, you're also not allowed to get benefit from Stam Yenam. So these things that are going to be listed in our Mishnah over here are going to be Asr, but their Isr is not going to be an Isr Hana, it's just going to be an Isr Achila. And so they are as follows. So there are 10 things now that are going to be recorded in this Mishnah. Number one, Chav Shechav Ovi Chavim, Ve'en Yisrael Ro'ehu. So you have milk that was milked by a non-Jew and there was no Jewish supervision. No Jew saw the actual milking process. In a moment we're going to see why. The milk, we'll come back to that in just a moment. Pass. Number two is going to be bread. Bread baked by a non-Jew. We're not allowed to eat it. Number three, shemen shalahen. Number three is going to be the oil. Oil produced, manufactured by a non-Jew. We're not allowed to drink that oil. Rebbe obeys dino itira shemen. Now Rebbe together with his basin was mati the oil. Okay, I'll come back to that line of the mission in just a moment. Shlakos, number four. Number four is any cooked food. Food cooked by a non-Jew, you're not allowed to eat. This is more popularly known to us as Bishal Akam. Food cooked by a non-Jew. The Gemara later on is going to spend some time talking about the parameters of the Isra of Bishal Akam. Number five, Kvashim Shadach Lasesa Lasocha Yain V'chametz. So you have certain pickled foods that we throw in a little bit of wine or a little bit of vinegar. So the wine and vinegar that they add to it to enhance the flavor and the taste, so that's now going to be Asr. It's going to be Asr Ba'achila, but not Asr Ba'hana. Now we discussed already back in the Mishnah, back on Chavtes Amud Beis, that there was Murias, that there was other things that they added wine to. And if wine just is serving there as an ingredient, but wine is not the main thing, so it goes down just a notch. Meaning wine by itself is Asr Ba'achila Uvahana, but when wine is now added to something else, it's only Asr Ba'achila, but not Asr Ba'hana. Number six on the list is Taras Trufa. So Taras Trufa, Rashi explains as being some sort of fish. Okay. The Rashi, Nitrafu, V'nishtabro, Dagam, V'eini, Karim, Hilka, Chayshal, Etmeyim. But they're all chopped up. The fish is all cut up already, so I don't know whether it's kosher or non-kosher, or maybe a mixture of the two. So therefore, you can't buy cut up fish. Number seven, Sir She'in Ba Daga Kil B'Shotetus Bo. So number seven is a brine where I don't have this daga kalbis swimming around in the brine. Now Rashi over here explains that brine that was extracted from a kosher fish. So it was an excellent medium, and so it was almost like a petri dish, so to say, for these certain types of aquatic animals to grow in. The aquatic animals are called daga kilbis. However, if the brine was extracted from non-kosher fish, so the daga kilbis doesn't grow inside of it. That's the way Rashi explains the Mishnah over here. So basically, if you see the daga kilbis, I mean, my best guess is that the daga kilbis itself you are not allowed to eat. But anyway, but basically it serves as symptomatic, meaning if you see it, so then you know that it's kosher fish brine. And if you don't see it, it's not kosher fish brine. So explains Rashi the Mishnah. Number eight is chilik. Rashi says that they're a small fish. It's the sultanis, Rashi says. We talked about the sultanis just the other day in the daf. Sultanis is a fish where it's very interesting. It's not born with scales, but scales develop upon further maturation. And so the sultanis is a kosher fish. I mentioned the other day, it's like the opposite of the swordfish. So the swordfish has scales, but then loses its scales. So, and I told you, conventional thinking is that swordfish are not kosher. Right? What I'm saying is slightly controversial, but not really. Most people say it's not edible. Not it's certainly edible, not kosher. Thank you. But this is the opposite of those sultanis. Sultanis is not born with scales, but scales develop later on. So Rashi over here points out that what happens is that this fish has many other non-kosher fish looking like it, because again, upon birth, it doesn't have scales. So what can end up happening is that you can have this fish mixed in together with non-kosher fish, and so you can't eat the chiluk that is trapped and prepared by a non-Jew. Number 9, kosher chiltis. Kosher chiltis is a very spicy vegetable cut with a knife. You have the spicy vegetable cut with a knife, so whatever tarfus is on the knife is going to go into the vegetable, so it says Rashi. And again, we'll talk more about this when we get to the Gemara later on. And finally, number 10 in the Mishnah, melch shal konadis. Rashi says, please wait till the Gemara. The Gemara is going to explain to us what that is. Hari elu asur mein asur ni sura na, and then the Mishnah creates its brackets like it normally does, where it first, you know, gives the heading. These are the things that are asur ba'achila, but not asur ba'ana. And then the Mishnah ends off that they are going to be asur, but ein isurim isur hana, but it's not an isur hana, just an isur achila. Okay, so we have 10 things mentioned in the Mishnah, and obviously, as the Gemara is normal to do, is that we're going to take every item in the Mishnah one by one and discuss every one of them individually. Before we get to the Gemara, however, let me just go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah, when it got to the third item in the Mishnah, that was oil, so the Mishnah then makes a comment that the Rebbe in his basin was matir the oil. Rashi over there writes on the Mishnah that it's this girsa does not belong in the Mishnah. It's a line in the Mishnah, but it shouldn't be there. Why? So Rashi says, I'll tell you why. Because in the Mishnah it says Rav Yehuda Hanasi, but really it's Rav Yehuda Nasiya. In other words, the grandson of Rav Yehuda Hanasi, right? The Shalshelis. In terms of the Mesora, so we know that Rebbe was a son to Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel. Now, it is a little bit confusing because there are two Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliels that are found in the Gemara. Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel, the elder, who is the son of Gamliel HaZaken, and then Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel himself had a son, obviously, by the name of Gamliel. No, not obviously. I take it back. So Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel himself had a son, Gamliel, the Gamliel. That's Rabban Gamliel, the one that we're used to hearing about. That's the one in Yavne. Meaning the Gemara's in Gittin that describe after Churban Beis HaMikdash. So one of the requests of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is Tainli Yavne v'Chachameha. And Rabban Gamliel was the head of Yavne over there. Then Rabban Gamliel of Yavne had a son of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel had a son of Reb Yehuda Nasi. Okay, so I know it's a lot of repeated names, but Gamliel HaZaken, Rav Shimon Gamliel HaZaken, Gamliel, Rabban Gamliel of Yavne, followed then by Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, followed then by Rebbe. And Rebbe also had a son, and Rebbe's son was, I'm sure you would have guessed it, so Rabban Gamliel. But a later Rabbi Gamliel, huh? Right. And then Rabban Gamliel had a son, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya. Okay, who was a grandson to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. And he's an Amora already. So you're not going to have an Amora in the Mishnah, meaning it can't be. So Rashi points out that this is, even though what the Mishnah is saying is factually correct, but it's not part of the Girsa of the Mishnah. Somehow it made its way into the Mishnah as part of the Girsa of the Mishnah, but Rashi says it's not the correct Girsa of the Mishnah. And we'll discuss more about Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya upending a Gzera D'Rabbanan, and that's a big part of today's daf. In the meantime, however, let's start with the Gemara Chalav. So we start the discussion in the Gemara regarding milk, and the discussion is why. Why did the Chachamim ban milk? Now milk, of course, let's go over the facts. You have milk coming from a kosher animal, this milk is kosher. If you have milk coming from a non-kosher animal, the milk is not kosher. It's really that simple. In other words, the production of kol ayotze min atahor, tar, kol ayotze min atame, is tame. That's easy. So, of course, if milk is coming from a kosher animal, otherwise known as a cow, so then the milk is 100% kosher. It's an organic product coming strictly from a kosher source. So the milk would be kosher. Why did the Chachamim ban the milk? So that's the Gemara's discussion. Now, over here, as you're going to see, we get to the Gemara, and the Gemara's going to give us some of the whys, okay, of the Gzera D'Rabbanan. Rashi, back in the Mishnah, makes a general comment, kind of like almost like a sweeping comment, V'kulo Mishum Chasas. Rashi in the Mishnah, now Rashi, by the way, the Rashi that I'm quoting in the Mishnah is on Shlakos, right? Kol davar shebishlo v'kocham v'afilo b'klitar, v'kulo Mishum Chasas. It's all because of intermarriage. Now, Rashi's comment over here is going on every case in the Mishnah, hard to imagine. Meaning, as we're going to be discussing right now with Chalav, it seems to be that the issue is tarfus, meaning it's that some non-kosher is going to be introduced. But still, though, there is a general theme of the Mishnah, which, you know, you could certainly point to many cases of the Mishnah, right? Wine's in the previous Mishnah, but oil, bread, cooked foods, and there the issue is, as the Gemara itself is going to say, the issue is that it's going to lead to social intimacy, and that, of course, will lead to intermarriage. So that is a common theme, but with a number of the cases in the Mishnah, as is evidenced right now as we start with the Gemara, you'll see that it's also tarfus as well. Meaning that there is a chasnas concern, And on top of that, there's also going to be a tarfus concern. So let's start now with the Gemara's discussion regarding milk. So the Gemara says, first of all, it's empirical. You look at kosher milk, it's white. You look at non-kosher milk, it's yellow. So just simply the coloration by itself is going to be proof positive in terms of whether we're looking at kosher or non-kosher milk. So the Gemara says like this. And the Gemara says, so you're worried about a mixture, right? So the Gemara says, I wouldn't worry about a mixture because there's another natural phenomena regarding kosher versus non-kosher milk. Kosher milk will curdle. Non-kosher milk will not curdle. Take a sample of this mixture and see. So if it curdles, so then it's kosher. And if it doesn't curdle, so then it's not kosher. And hachanami. So the Gemara says, and what are you worried about? You're worried about the cheese again? Same story. Only kosher milk will curdle and turn into cheese. Non-kosher milk will not. So the Gemara says, hachanami maiskina dekabai le lekimcha. So the Gemara says, okay, but we're talking about not where it is milk by itself, not where it's turned into cheese, but we're talking about where it's used for some sort of dip. And so basically it's thrown in with a bunch of other things. It's used as a dip. And so as far as the coloration is concerned, I can no longer distinguish colors. In terms of curdling, it's now, it's part of another recipe. So the Gemara says that's what we're worried about. Venishko minei. Let me just finish the Gemara's, the flow. Venishko minei kaling, venekum. So the Gemara says, okay, so take a small sample of the dairy content of this dip, and see if it curdles. If it curdles, it's good. And if it doesn't curdle, it's not good. So the Gemara says, "Kevin de Batar nami ika nisuve delo kaime lekalamekam ala demilso." So the Gemara says, "Look, even when I'm curdling kosher milk, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be separating the curds from the whey. But in other words, but even in the curdling of kosher milk, there's going to be some residual milk, okay, whey. So, but in other words, but there's going to be some of that left." So the Gemara says, "So even with a test, it's still not going to be 100% conclusive that the full content of this dairy material is coming from kosher milk. It may come from non-kosher milk as well." So basically the Gemara says, I'm worried about a mixture of kosher and non-kosher, and even with testing, which generally speaking works, but it doesn't work all the time. And the Gemara says, and even if we're going to make cheese out of it. So in other words, it's a composite of kosher and non-kosher milk. It's a mixture. And even if we are going to make cheese, and you're right, non-kosher milk doesn't curdle. But still what's going to end up happening is that the non-kosher milk is going to be still within the milk, within the cheese that you just created. It'll be within the holes of the cheese. So in other words, even as you make it into cheese, the non-curdling, non-kosher milk is still going to be part and parcel of the cheese. Yeah, Ben.
Is there a time requirement for it? It doesn't curdle. Does it curdle right away, or do you have to wait a couple hours?
The Gemara's premise, the assumption of the Gemara, is that non-kosher milk simply doesn't curdle.
No, I understand that.
Right, okay.
But to do the test, right, doesn't it require like some time to see what the results are, or does it curdle right away?
I don't know. It's a fair question. I don't know. Eventually there would be bittul, meaning if it's a... Right. So the Gemara doesn't say this, by the way. In other words, it really depends on whether it tastes the same or it tastes different. If it tastes the same, so then we're talking about min bimino. So if it doesn't taste the same, it's min b'sheino mino. The truth of the matter is that, yeah, okay. In other words, even if it's min bimino, you still require shishim because, okay, anyway, in this particular scenario. Let's continue the Gemara. We're talking now about pas. We're talking about now about the bread. Amar Rav Kahana Rav Yochan pas lo hitcher bevesen lo hitcher bevesen. So the Gemara is a really interesting statement as it relates to bread. So in other words, bread is number two on the list of things in our Mishnah, which if a guy makes bread, you can't eat it. Meaning again, even if everything's kosher, even if all the ingredients are kosher, you can't eat it. Now again, I'll go back to the Rashi and the Mishnah. It's because of intermarriage, meaning you allow them to make bread for you, so that'll create now a social construct and social intimacy and elite intermarriage. So you can't eat their bread. Now the Gemara has an opening statement regarding the bread, which is Amar of Kahana Amar of Yochanan Paslo Hutra Bebeisdin. You know, bread was never allowed. Now, you know how things work. If anyone's in denial mode, so it means, it generally means that somebody's saying the other otherwise. Okay? So over here, when the Gemara makes a statement in the name of Rav Yochanan, that you know, bread was never allowed. Okay, so in other words, obviously he's responding to something. Right? You almost hear it. So the Gemara says, Michal Dika Mandashari. The Gemara hears it. The Gemara says, oh, somebody must have allowed it. Otherwise, why is he making such a clear statement and declaration that was never allowed. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, that's absolutely right. Yep, some people did allow it. And the Gemara now is going to give us some reports. Rebbe was out one day in the field, meaning he was out in the, not in the city, not in urban life, but out there in the fields. And what happened was is that this non-Jew came over and handed him a loaf of bread. And Amar, and this is Rebbe's comment now, Amar Rebbe, kamana pazeh, beautiful bread, love it. And ma re'u chachamim la'osra, why did the chachamim asr it? So he makes a quizzical / ambiguous comment regarding the bread, almost as if to say, you could interpret it to mean, I don't understand why the chachamim asr it, or it almost like a rhetorical, like the chachamim didn't asr this. Now, this is all we have to work with right now in terms of the statement of Rebbe. So Maru Chachamim, so the Gemara says, so first of all, what is Rebbe even asking? Why did the Chachamim say? Mishum Chasnus. So the Gemara says, the issue is intermarriage. Like we all know that. It's a given assumption, like Rashi said back in the Mishnah, that everybody knew. That these Gzeris were all concerned of intermarriage. Elamaru Chachamim Losar Besada. Ah. So the Gemara now tries to understand Rebbe's comment. Maybe what Rebbe was wondering is as follows. You're living in the city. Many people are there. You have a guy living within super proximity to you. He bakes bread for you, and this happens day in, day out. It'll lead to social connection. It'll lead to intermarriage. The Gemara says, Rebbe says, I understand that. But you're on the field. You're traveling. There's not that many people around. Is bread going to really create the kind of social construct where the Chachamim need to make a gzera? Now, Kisvurim Ha'am hit to Rebbe Apas. So now, with all this to work with, so now the people thought, oh, you know what? Did you hear what Rebbe said? Right? Around Kiddush and Shabbos. Everyone's talking now. Did you hear what Rebbe said? And so people now think that what Rebbe meant is that it's now mutter. Velohi. Rebbe lohi tiras apas. But the Gemara says, but it's not true. Okay? It's the fake news. Didn't happen. Rebbe wasn't mutter the pas. Okay. Now, Rav Yosef Itim, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda Amar Lo Kacha, Yamaisa La Amru. Pam achas alach Rebbe lamakom echad. So the Gemara gives us now another reporting of exactly what happened. Rebbe goes to a certain place. Ra pas dachuk l'talmidim. And now he sees that the students are learning in a certain location, and bread is hard to come by. I'm a Rebbe ain't kam palter. So Rebbe says, okay, there's got to be a baker somewhere here, around here. Meaning, what's the issue? The issue is you can't find bread. Find a baker and go get some bread. Again, that's the comment of Rebbe. And now in the second version of the story, what did Rebbe mean? Kisvur ma'am, lomar palter ove kochavim. So they thought that what Rebbe meant is, look, we all know the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, in the second paragraph of Avodah Zarah. We all know that bread that's baked from a non-Jew is aser. But we're talking now about a baker. We're not talking about an individual, a private individual. So we're talking about a commercial baker. Should be okay, right? So the Gemara says, that's what people thought. V'hu lo amar ela palter yisrael. But no, that's not what Rebbe meant. Rebbe meant the Jewish baker. Okay, so again, in the second version, same basic storyline. Rebbe made a comment, could have been interpreted to mean that there's some heter that exists within the world of bread, but the Gemara says, but lohi, but that's not true. That's not correct. I'm Rebbe Chaba, afil amand amar palta avikochav lo amar nela deleka palta yisrael. Ava bamakam diika palta yisrael lo. So the Gemara now qualifies, if you subscribe to the idea that if it's a commercial baker, then you can eat the bread baked by a non-Jew, that's only if there's no Jewish baker in town. But if there's a Jewish baker in town, then no. Rav Yochanan Amar afilu amand amar palta avikochavim hanim ila besad aval beir lo mishum chasnos. Now, Rabbi Yochanan says, even if you subscribe to the idea that bread baked by a non-Jew is okay, that's only out in the field, but not in the city. In the city where everyone is living on top of one another all together, so then no. Then even the bread baked by a non-Jew would be unacceptable. So already you see amongst the Amoraim that there, within the gzera of bread, there is certainly some maneuverability. There are some heterim. Debated exactly what the heter is, but there's certainly some heterim. Aibu hava menaches v'achal pas, abe mitzri. Aibu was eating bread. He was somewhere at Bay Mitzri literally means between the borders. So in other words, it means to say that he wasn't in the town per se. He was somewhere outside of town. Let's say he was traveling and needed to eat. So he ate bread that was baked by a non-Jew. Right? Rashi writes over here that it was in the Sada, but it was not in the. It was not in the town. Rashi actually describes it as Beina Eitzel Hamitzarim. Somewhere, it's somewhere by the border. So Amalu Rav Avitim Rav Nachma Yitzchak Lo Tishtau Behadei Da'aybu. So Rav, some say it was Rav Nachma Yitzchak, says, okay, now the man is in Chayrim. No one have conversation with him. The Ka'achilachma Da'amai, because he's eating bread baked by a non-Jew. So in other words, the Gemara ends off this discussion by saying that if you violate the ban, of course it depends what the ban actually is, but if you violate the ban, so then you could be eligible for chayrim. Okay, that ends the Gemara's discussion regarding bread. So regarding milk, so the Gemara says it's a tarfus consideration. Again, it may also be a chasnas discussion. The Gemara doesn't mention that, but again, that could be the overarching context of the entire discussion. But by milk by a non-Jew, it's a tarfus consideration, and by the bread, so it's a chasnas discussion. The Gemara says that straight out, that it has to do with intermarriage, and then a discussion and a question in the Gemara, which after even learning the Gemara, you end off not really knowing in terms of whether or not there are any heterim whatsoever. I bypassed the milk discussion and I didn't mention Rav Moshe. I'll just mention it quickly. This is really just a question of psak and who you follow. Rav Moshe in America says that you can drink milk even though there was no Jew supervising the milking process. The Mishnah says you're not allowed to. The Mishnah says it's usher. In fact, it's a bona fide issur de rabbanon. So the Rav Moshe writes that nowadays that our farms are regulated. And if they try to introduce any other milk into the milk, so they're going to get penalized by the government. So Rav Moshe says it's like anan sahade. Right? The concept of anan sahade is that things are so self-evident that even without actual witnesses, it's as if we saw it. So it's a principle. The Gemara has that principle.
That's only here in Europe. They don't have the evidence.
Right. Right. So Rav Moshe was speaking here to us Jews here in America. So anyway, so that's Rav Moshe's chiddush as it relates to milk. And some follow it, some don't follow it. Even Rav Moshe himself was personally machmer. But anyway, he would only drink chalvisol.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think he had it for his family.
Just for him. Okay. So the
people know that.
Yeah.
If a rav would tell someone, "Go get me a bread,"
mm-hmm.
would it enter that person's mind that he needs to go? To a
worship. Right. From the Gemara was clear. He made a comment. What he meant with that comment, the Gemara is debating.
What happens if it was not Jewish?
Right. Okay. Shem and Shalahem, we are now in the Gemara. We're on the bottom of Lamed Hamad Beis. We are continuing now. We're up to oil. Shemen. So now the Gemara is talking about oil that's produced by a non-Jew. Again, let's think about it. Let's think this through. We're talking about now an organic product. It's oil. It's expressed from the olive. And so there's no tarfus issue, presumably, and yet the Chachamim banned it. And again, like Rashi says back in the Mishnah, the issue most probably is an issue of chasus, it's an issue of intermarriage. However, with the oil discussion, it's going to actually be a lengthy discussion of the Gemara. Let's begin it right now. So basically, who is the one who started the gzera on oil? Shemin. Rav Amar Daniel Gazar Alav Ushmol Amar Zilfasam Shokelim Temeim Osra Sam. So there are two opinions amongst the Amarim exactly what happened regarding the oil. So Rav's position, really easy, and that is Daniel. Daniel, who lived during the Tkufa of Chorban Bayis Rishon, and the Galus of Bavel, going into, all the way leading into the Binyan Bayis Sheni. So Daniel, by the way, finds his way as a child. In other words, in Sefer Daniel, we learn that as a child, he's taken and brought into the courtroom of Nebuchadnezzar, and he's one of the advisors of Nebuchadnezzar. Four Jewish boys in total. He's one of the Jewish boys. We'll talk a little bit more about that later this morning. So anyway, so he was an advisor to Nebuchadnezzar. And he lived beyond the years of Nebuchadnezzar and Evel Merodach and Belshazzar. In fact, when Belshazzar, right, I'm just going as per the Gemara's in Megillah, Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years, the son of Merodach 23 years, the son Belshazzar ruled for another 2 years, three in total, sorry. And then Belshazzar was conquered by the Persians, and Daniel continued even into the Persian kingdom.
He was
an older person over there. The Gemara tells us in Megillah that when we're going to be reading the Megillah in just a little over a week from today, and we're going to be introduced to this a minor character, so to say, in the Megillah of Hasach, and the Gemara tells us that Hasach is Daniel. That's Daniel finds his way already in the Megillah, all the way in the Megillah. Yes, by that point in time, he was an older man. So anyway, so Daniel was the one who made the gzera on oil. So Rav Amar, Daniel Gazar Alav, Shmuel Amar, and Shmuel says no. In other words, it's not a gzera de Rabbanan necessarily related to chasus, but rather, it's put into the kalim of a non-Jew. Now the way the Shmuel first presents it to us, as we turn now to the top of Lamed Vav Amar Aleph, Zilfasim Shol Kalim Tamei Mos Rasam. What's going to happen is that the Tuma, right now, of the non-Jewish kalim is going to go into the oil and imbue it with tuma. Now, that's a really difficult statement of the Gemara that the Gemara just made, because, in other words, if the kli is tamei, but the oil just touching the kli is going to become tamei. And if it's just the belia that's tuma, by tuma tahara, we don't normally talk about something being balua and still retaining its tuma. But anyway, the Gemara immediately corrects that statement of Shmuel. First of all, the Gemara says, well, if the issue is tuma and tahara, we all are not concerned about eating food in a state of tahara. It's a nice practice if you want to do it. Bizman is that nowadays it's impossible. We're all tummy tumas mace. But in other words, Bizmana Gemara. Some people ate everything in a state of tahara, but that was a chumrah. That was a wonderful practice. But not everybody did it. And the Gemara says, Ela zilfasim shakelim asur mosrasim. So the Gemara immediately modifies and corrects the statement of Shmuel. What the problem is that when they make their olive oil, the olive oil itself, of course, is kosher. In other words, it's organic. It's coming from the ground. It's kosher. You know what the problem is? The problem is that where is it stored? It's stored in their kalim. Their kalim, which are not kosher, in other words, have absorption of non-kosher, and so therefore the non-kosher that is absorbed in the kalim is now going to come out and enter into the olive oil. Okay. Lidi di damin is zilfasim shel kelim asurim osrasan. Hayne dechias Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Matav Amar darsh Rabbi Simlai ben Itzivin. So Shmuel says, according to me, all this makes perfect sense. What makes sense? The following. The following was reported by Rabbi Simlai in the town of Nitzivin. Shemen, that as it relates to oil, Rabbi Yehuda ubeis dino nimnu alav vitirua. The beis din of Rabbi Yehuda. Now, as Rashi mentioned back in the Mishnah, even though the Gemara here uses the words Rabbi Yehuda, what the Gemara really means over here is Rabbi Yehuda Nesiah, the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda. So the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda was Matir. So the Gemara says, according to me, it says Shmuel, makes perfect sense. Why? Because this is a kashrus question. And on the question of kashrus, we know that there's a machlokas. We're going to see it later in the Masechta. In fact, this idea is going to come up again and again. This is the first time the Masechta makes reference to it. And that is the issue of no saying tam lefgam. No saying tam lefgam means the following. We know that food is only going to be usur, meaning let's assume the food comes from a non-kosher source. It's only going to be usur as long as it's edible. Once it's no longer edible, once the taste of that food becomes putrid, so then it's no longer considered food, and therefore it's no longer going to be usur. That's true regarding food. That's also true regarding the taste of that food as well, meaning that if the taste of that food goes into a pot, let's say it's cooked into a pot, so as long as that taste is still going to be a good taste, so then it's going to be asur. But once that taste becomes rancid, once it becomes putrid, so then it's no longer going to be good. So, how long does taste last? We're talking now not about the food, we're just simply talking about the residual taste of that food. How long does it last? So we say 24 hours. We're going to see that later in the Masechta. And after 24 hours, it is now what is considered in the halacha of no saying tam livgam. So no saying tam livgam, is that going to be mutter or is that going to be asr? We're going to see that there's a debate on that issue. The halacha is that no saying tam livgam is mutter, as we're going to see later in the Masechta as well. So Shmuel says, look, according to me, it makes all the sense in the world. Because they took the olive oil and they stored it in their non-kosher kelim. And so the taste now is going from the non-kosher kelim into the olive oil. But I subscribe to the idea, and generally the halachic consensus is, no, same time lefgam is mutter. So in other words, what changed? It's very simple, says Shmuel. Originally they held no same time lefgam is aser, and then the halacha then moved to the position of no same time lefgam is mutter. So I understand now how we can go from olive oil once upon a time being aser to now being mutter. Shmuel says, for me, makes perfect sense. But elalidicha damar Daniel gazar alav. But according to you, Rav, this is not a tarfus issue. This is a gzeira derabanan, instituted by none other than Daniel. So now, who lifted the ban? And we know the rule is Daniel gazar v'aser Rav Yehuda nasi mevatale. And now you're telling me that at a later generation, and we're going now, we're moving ahead about 500 years of Jewish history to go from Daniel to Rav Yehuda Nisiya. It's about 500 years. But in other words, but that doesn't bother us, meaning 500 years, fine. What bothers us is that if it's a gzeirah of a Beis Din, so in order for a later Beis Din to uproot it, the later Beis Din has to be greater. We know the rule, that to none. That a later basin can only uproot as something that was done by an earlier basin, but only if they're greater in both wisdom and in number. And we discussed a number of times what does wisdom mean, what does number mean, how do you quantify these, but for our purposes right now, let's assume that perfectly quantifiable, and the Gemara is saying, don't tell me that Rav Yehuda Nasi is greater than that of Daniel, and according to you, Rav, how can it get lifted? So Amar Leis, so Rav says to Shmuel as follows, really interesting comment. He says, Simlai Luda'i Kamart, look, all this you're reporting in the name of Simlai Luda'i. Shani Luda'i de Mezalzale. So he says, I don't accept that report. Meaning, you're saying he said it, even if he said it, he's unreliable. So Amar Leis, so Shmuel says to Rav, Ashalachle, should I now send a message back to Rebbe Simlai, that you made such a comment like that you made such a comment? So ichsef. So Rav was embarrassed. Rav didn't want his comment to go back to Rabbi Simlai.
This is a derogatory comment about the people living in Lod, right? But Rabbi Akiva lived there, right? In Pesach story they go to
Yeah. Okay. And the but it was his derogatory comment was specifically about Rabbi Simlai. Okay, well, anyway, but yeah, look, it's a strange Gemara, meaning Rav made a comment that now, if that comment would have been taken back to who he said it about, he would have been embarrassed. Okay, and the clear, I mean, it's a clear implication of the Gemara that Rav said something that he would not have wanted repeated, which, you know, of course, we're not allowed to do, but, okay, it's a difficult bit of Gemara, admittedly. But,
while we have this kashrut discussion, are we not chashash about using the oil for anointing the Avodah Zarah?
No, right. The wine was used as part of the idolatrous practice. Oil wasn't. Like I said earlier, there's certain assumptions that go into these Gemaras in terms of what was and was not used for idolatry. Oil is just not one of them. So Amar Ashach Leichsev. So Amarav Im Heim Lo Dashu Anan Lo Dashin Vaksiv. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. It is not crazy to suggest that Daniel made a gzera, but it wasn't a formal gzera. Let's consider. And now we're turning back to the psukim regarding Daniel and Sefer Daniel. And this is early in Daniel's life when he started off in the court of Nebuchadnezzar. Vayasim Daniel aliba asher loikal bepat bag hamelech uvayayin mishtav. And Daniel took upon himself that he's not going to eat the bread that was baked in the kitchen, in the king's kitchen, in Nebuchadnezzar's kitchen. And he's not going to drink the drink that's produced there as well. He's not going to drink the wine and mishtav and other drinks as well. Well, now, what are the other drinks? Bishtei mishtav sekasa medab, rechem mishtei yayin, vechem mishtei shemen. So the Gemara says very clearly it's both wine and oil. Now, clearly over here, Daniel said that he's banning the drinking of oil and wine together with bread. And now, was he making a formal ban for everybody? Or was it just a personal ban? And the Gemara says, and now we could debate. Rav Savar Ali Bosam L'Cho Yisrael, U'L'Cho Yisrael Hovra. So Rav is of the opinion that, look, what Daniel did is that it was both personal, and then he made the Gzera for the Jewish people in mass. U'Shmuel Savar Ali Bosam L'Cho Yisrael Hovra. And Shmuel says, no. It was a personal chumrah that he took upon himself, but he did not make a formal ban for the Jewish people. Okay, so the Gemara says, so we can have this machlokas between Rav and Shmuel in the psukim themselves regarding Daniel, whether or not he made a ban on oil for the entire Jewish people. So again, where do we stand right now in terms of the Gzera of Shemen, the third item in our Mishnah? So according to Shmuel, it's a Tarfus issue, which then helps us understand how historically later on, by the base in Rav Yehuda Nasi, Rav Yehuda Nasiya, they lifted it because it wasn't a formal ban per se. It was a kashrus issue, which is subject to a machlokus, and he accepted the opinion of Nosim Tam of Gamaz Mutter. Ma She'ein Kain, according to Rav, it's a formal ban instituted by Daniel. And then, of course, the question arises, which the Gemara does not have an answer for, and that is that if Daniel made the ban, so how could it be lifted by a later Beis Din? Okay. V'shem and Daniel Gazer v'hamar bali avim inutai mishmei derav pitam v'shmana yenim v'nesem kolam v'shmana asar davrahim. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. How can you say that oil is part of the gzera of Daniel? Actually, it was a gzera of shmona asar davar, of the 18 things. Now, what is the shmona asar davar? So you go back to the Gemara's in Shabbos, in the beginning of the, not the beginning, but in the first parak of Masechet Shabbos, and there the Gemara lists for us the 18 items that were decreed by the Beis Din of Shammai, of Beis Shammai. Now, ultimately what happens, now, in other words, you know the halacha, when there's a machlok between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, so then the halacha falls at Beis Hillel, but on Shmona Sar Davra, but on the 18 things, Beis Hillel ends up capitulating and agreeing to that of Shammai. So that means to say that these Yudches Davar, these Shmona Sar Davar that was Nigzar by Shammai, it was agreed to by everybody. And we know, of course, that Hillel and Shammai come well after Daniel. Daniel was before the building of the Bais Sheni, and Hillel and Shammai are hundreds of years into Binyan Bais Sheni. So, okay, so in other words, so the Gemara is bothered by, what are you talking about? This is Gzera done by Daniel. It was done by Hillel and Shammai. It's part of Shmona Sar Davar. V'chitem asa Daniel gazav lo kibel v'asa tamidei deal of Shammai v'gazav kibel. And the Gemara says, and what's the big deal? Let's just assume stages. That Daniel made the Gzera, but it didn't take. And as we're going to learn in just a little bit, today's daf, in order for Gzera to work, it's got to take. People have to accept it. And maybe then, a couple hundred years later, along comes the students of Hillel and Shammai. They made the Gzera once again, and it took.
That Daniel made it for his generation because they're living in Galut.
Okay, yeah. This generation I just work with the, you know, you're right. It's a plausible argument, but the Gemara assumes that this maybe would have happened. What happened? So in came Maya Suduse Derav. So the Gemara says, okay, but then of course what is Rav telling us? Because Rav is clearly of the position that the Gzera goes back to Daniel. Ella Daniel Gazar Allah Bi'ir Vasu Inna Vagazar Afil Basata. And the Gemara says, okay. So in other words, here were the stages. Meaning, Daniel did make Gzera in oil, but only in the city. And as we discussed already by bread, there's more concern of intermarriage in city than there is out in the fields. So the Gzera of Daniel on oil was made specifically in the cities. And then Hillel and Shammai come and they extend the Gzera even out to the fields as well. Rav Yehuda Nasi Echemasa Lemishrei Tekanta Detami Deshamay Ve'elo Ve'atunan Ein Beis Din Yechol Avatol Devrei Beis Din Chaver Alim Kein Gadol Hemenu Bechachma V'Minyan. So the Gemara now just simply repeats the question, but it's just further fortified. Look, says the Gemara. So now that we know that this is a double gzera, according to Rav, it's a double gzera. One gzera started by Daniel, a second one extending it by Hillel and Shammai, and now Rav Yehuda Nasi can come years later and just lift it. And you have to be greater b'chachma v'minyan in order to lift it. V'od, and the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what, another complication. I'm a rabbi b'barachanim, Rav Yochanan b'chol yachol avato beisin divrei beisin chavero. Everything can be repealed. Or I should say better, almost everything can be repealed. Chutz mishmona asar davar, shafi lo yavo aliyahu beis dino, ein shomim lo. You can have a court as great as the one that will be put together by Eliyahu Anavi. And yet, when it comes to Shmona Sar Davar, Shmona Sar Davar cannot be repealed. Now, Shmona Sar Davar cannot be repealed. Why not? The Gemara doesn't say. But the simple pshat is that it was something which was a Davar Muskam. It was something agreed to. In other words, it ended up that the students of Hillel and Shammai ended up agreeing to it. There could be something more intrinsic and more fundamental, but whatever the case is, Shmona Sar Davar can't be repealed, and oil is part of Shmona Sar Davar. So Amr Misharshe Matam Hol Pashat Yisur Barav Yisrael Shemen Lo Pashat Yisur Barav Yisrael. So the Gemara says like this. What we really have to do is look back at the original Gzera that was instituted regarding oil. Meaning, again, how are Gzeras rolled out? I know we talked about this yesterday, but here the Gemara now, it gives us a little more discussion. Gzeras are rolled out where basically what the Chachamim do is they have a Gzera go through a trial period. In other words, can the Jewish people handle such a Gzera? Meaning, on one hand, it is the Chachamim's job to make the Gzera. On the other hand, they can't make a Gzera that's too onerous. If it's just too taxing, if it's just something which the vast majority of the Jewish people cannot handle it, so that means to say now that the Gzera never is going to take force. And the Gemara here doesn't say. Earlier, the Gemara said that the reason is not going to be publicized at least for a year. Right. Right, correct. So but over here, in terms of how long it takes for it to take hold, Gemara doesn't say. So lo pashi yisur barav yisrael damar rabbi shmuel bar abba rabbi yochanan yeshu rabbi sinu ubadku al shemen shlo pashi yisur barav yisrael. And so they basically polled, are you holding by this gzera of oil? Are you holding by the gzera of oil? And I'm not sure exactly how the polling system worked. They are not knocking door to door, but whatever the case is, they did some sort of polling system, and they found that the vast majority of the Jewish people did not accept upon themselves the gzera. And you know that Gzera is not going to take place unless the majority of the tzibur is able to accept it. And the Gemara now has a pasuk, as we turn now to the top of Lamed Vav Amud Beis, a pasuk speaking to this idea that Gzeras only are in force when the tzibur accepts it. Pasuk says, "In Malachi b'me'era tem na'arim, v'osi atem kovim hagoy kula." That a curse is made. Over here, the word curse and ban are interchangeable in this context. In other words, you can make a curse, you can make a ban, but that's only goy kula. That's only when the entire nation accepts it upon themselves. The entire nation, the majority of the nation, however you want to say it, but if it's not accepted by the majority of the nation, so then it doesn't good. The gzera itself does not. Is not in force. So e ika goy kulo in ilolo. Okay, the Gemara continues gufa.
The
article
make a distinction between gezerah and sakamata, which is interesting. The gezerah cannot be
all,
but the
sakamata
can be.
Okay. I hear the distinction. Gufa. Amar Bali Amar Avim and Utah Mishmei Darav Pitam Vishman of Yanum of Nosem Kulam Mishmana Sod Avraham. So the enactments of bread, oil, wine, and their daughters, which obviously we're going to explain in just a moment, so they're all part of Shmona Sod Avraham. The 18 enactments that were enacted by the students of Hillel and Shammai. So Benosem Mai, so oil, wine, and bread, we all understand. Meaning oil, wine, and bread, if they're produced by a non Jew, so we're not allowed to eat it. And again, fundamentally, principally, has to do with intermarriage. What is the gzera of benoseim? So Amr Avnachma Yitzhak Gazra benoseim nidos me'arisoseim. So the enactment is that they are going to be considered a nida from the time that they're born. Now, to be clear, only a Jew, right? All women menstruate. That's a physiological reality. But in terms of becoming tamei, that's only for Jewish women, not for non-Jewish women. In other words, a Jewish woman has tumas nida, a non-Jewish woman does not have tumas nida. So the gzera is that their daughters are going to be considered on a rabbinic level a nida from the time that they're born. And again, well, the purpose of this is to create distance and separation so that there will be further impasse and an obstacle for intermarriage. Ugeniva mishmei derav amar kulam mishum avros kochavim gazra behem. Now, all this is because of a concern of Avodah Zarah, meaning that ultimately what's going to end up happening is going to lead to Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara explains this better. So the Gemara says that bread was enacted because of their oil. Now the Gemara says, now that part I don't get. My ume de shemen mipas. Oil, bread, basically one and the same. I don't understand how one is greater than the other. So the Gemara says, Ella, the Gemara says, you're right. Let's correct. Alpitam mishmanam mishum yenam. In other words, if we are getting comfortable where they bake bread, we eat it, and they make oil, and we and we drink it. So then what's going to end up happening is that the next step on this, and the social ladder, is going to be wine. Okay? Now, if we're drinking together wine, so that obviously leads to intoxication, and then we're going to be obviously much more comfortable, and then it'll lead to intimacy with the daughters. Now that is going to lead to avodah zarah. And then we end off with a really obscure statement, which we're going to explain better at the end of this daf. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. There's a gzera that one is not allowed to be with a non-Jewish woman. But no, Sam Daraisa, what does that mean, gzera? Gzera? What do you mean, gzera? Teneso Daraisa, dechsev, lo tischatem bam, Daraisa. I'm sorry, lo tischatem bam. It's a pasuk in the Torah that one is not allowed to intermarry. What is that? What is that? What are you talking about that that's gzera? So Daraisa Zainumas of Asharav de Kochavim lo. So the Gemara says, well, if you look at that pasuk and read it in its context, it's talking about the seven Canaanite nations. And maybe now what the Gzera de Rabbanan is that intermarriage with women other than the seven Canaanite nations, that's mutter min haTorah, and the Chachamim created a ban. V'asunin of Gaza, afilu d'shar of dekochavim. Afilu d'shar of dekochavim. The Gemara says, but wait one second. L'Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, d'amar kiyaser bin chamei acharai, l'Rabbis kol amasiros, Michael amemar. Now the Gemara points out that according to the Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, it is an isur d'araisa of intermarriage with any non-Jewish woman, whether she is from the seven Canaanite nations or even if she's not. Because the Torah says that as long as you're a maaser, as long as what's going to end up happening is that you're going to marry her and she is going to turn you away from Yiddishka, Yadus, and Kadosh Baruch Hu, so then it is going to be an issa d'araisa. Ela d'araisa ishus derech chasnus. V'asu inu gazar afilu derech znus. So the Gemara says that the Issa D'Araisa is marriage, and what the Shammai and Hillel instituted was a ban on even znus, even just having lascivious behavior. So the Gemara says, znus nami bebezin, so shame gazru. That is an ancient gzera. The Gemara points out, Vayama Yehuda Otsi Ovisi Sarev. Tamar, who was part of the Mishpachas Yisrael B'nai Yisrael, she married into the family, and she had just simply a non-marriage, lascivious relationship with another man. Now Yehuda happened not at the time not to know that it was him. Okay, and eventually we all know how the story went. But at the time when he was judging what her fate was going to be, what was her crime? The crime was znus. She was with another man. So Ela Daraisa v'kochavim haba abas Yisrael demashcha basrei. So the Gemara says that the Issa D'Araisa is where a non-Jewish man is having is going to be not marriage, but just simply be with a Jewish woman, Demashcha Basrei, where she's going to be drawn by him. Really interesting, by the way, the Gemara assumes over here that the stronger religious influence is going to be the man, not the woman. Right? I can certainly hear an argument the other way, but the Gemara's assumption is that the man is going to be more influential. Ava Yisrael Ba'alav is Kochavim Lo. But if a Jewish man is having relations with a non-Jewish woman, again, not marriage. Marriage isn't this d'oraisa, but it's just relations. So, and the Gemara is assuming that that he's not going to be drawn after her. And so what now the Beis Din of Hillel and Shammai did is they extended the gzera even in such a case. So the Gemara says, wait one second. How can you call that a gzera de Rabbanan? Isn't that an iser min haTorah? Now, it's not written in the Torah, but it's halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai. We know the halacha is that if a man was having relations with a non-Jewish woman, and it's public, by the way, does not mean that it's seen by everybody, but everybody knows about it, right? The Gemara says that by the Esther and Mordechai, the Gemara describes as being far hesya. Right? It just simply means everyone knows about it. So as long as everyone knows about it, you're allowed to kill the man. So So the Gemara says, okay, you're right, but that of course is public, meaning when everyone knows about it. But privately, a Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman to be intimate with one another is not, but privately is not an Issa D'Araisa, and that is a violation of the Gzera. Yisrael Baal Avikochavim Chayev Mishum Nashga. Ki asarav v'namar mishum nashgaz. So the Gemara says that this was a ban that was made by the Chashmonaim, who are coming just a little bit earlier than Hillel and Shammai. So the Gemara says, so it's an earlier ban. And the ban is because of Nashgar, Nashgaz. I start tomorrow, I'll explain what that means a little bit better. But anyway, let's just deal with the Gemara's answer right now. Ki gazru beizinu shal chashmonai biya, aval yichud lo, v'asu inu gazru afilu yichud. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the ban that was made by the Chashmonaim was on Bia. But just to be alone, secluded alone, a Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman to be secluded, that's not an Isser. And along comes Hillel and Shammai, and that's the ban that they introduced and included, is just seclusion. Okay, we'll stop over here at this point in the Gemara, even though we're really, quite frankly, not at the end of the Sugya. Okay, we introduce ourselves to the Gzerah D'Rabbanan on bread, oil, wine, cooked foods, and six other Gzerah D'Rabbanans that are mentioned in the Mishnah back on Lamed Hamad Beis. We discussed today, briefly, milk that was milked by a non-Jew with no Jewish supervision. We talked about the bread that was baked by a non-Jew. We talked about oil, and quite frankly, we're still in the oil discussion. The oil took up a good part of today's, it's the entirety of today's daf. A discussion and the debate why exactly the Chachamim banned the oil. Is it a kashrus issue, or is it have to do with chastas? And that is the debate between Rav and Shmuel that takes up pretty much the entirety of today's daf.